Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 13th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Belgian Grand Prix. We're beyond halfway at this point, and to do this, I'm joined by Timo Albers Daly. How are you?
Nothing more, but I'll get into that and the reasons why in a bit. How are you?
I'm doing all right, yeah. It was a good racing weekend. I had a busy weekend as I was at Festival of the Unexceptional. I was doing the Concours judging on the Saturday, so got home, caught up on qualifying and the sprint, and then sort of sat down for a very lovely Sunday of motorsport with Formula 3, Formula 2 and Formula 1, though there wasn't any Formula 3 because it was too wet, and at points it seemed it was also too wet for Formula 1, but yeah.
It feels like you could describe this bar weekend a little bit like Goldilocks when she gets into the house. She's either finding something that's too hot, not hot enough, and it's struggled to finding something that's just right. And I'm not sure we got there for any of these actual F1, F2, F3 racing in the end.
Yeah, even F2, despite the fact that we got pretty much the entire race done, the results weren't actually
feel as energetic as it usually did, and then it didn't matter anyway because they then changed the podium post race with various penalties left, right, and center. So you kind of sitting there going, "What the hell did I just do with my morning?" Not an awful lot.
Yeah, well, I went shopping and bought some lunch, but yeah, yeah. The F2 race.
End of my point. Not an awful lot.
Yeah, we'll discuss the F2 when we get to like our F2 mid-season review because I think there's
something certain... Jasmine Spa won't take long.
Yeah, there's some interesting bits and pieces to report back on that. But anyway, we'll jump into the Belgian Grand Prix weekend from a Formula One point of view. And the first bit of news is that we had a new introductory music theme for this weekend, at least, which was Hans Zimmer's main theme from the F1 movie played over the opening credits for the Belgian Grand Prix, which was...
Did you have this, first of all?
I did. I did get this on Sky, yeah.
Because, interestingly, not everyone did, and... Depends on the world feed, because obviously a lot of people internationally still are forced to watch the Sky feed. They don't have a choice. But not all of them got Zimmer over the top of it, which I found intriguing, because I would have thought you'd just do it for everyone. You're F1, you own the title sequence, you kind of have the pre-ordained stuff there already. Why not just splash it over everything? Why release it in some countries and not in others? But that was by the by. I know I liked it more than you did. I'm just glad to see an idea that we talked about fairly recently already actually happening for once in F1. It's a shame that it's not worked in terms of sprint races and what we'd like to see there instead, but I'll take what I can get. And I think the only amusing thing for me here was the amount of comments from newer fans, let's say, claiming that it was absolutely like the worst thing they've ever seen, and we've got to bring back Brian Tyler's theme, as if that's always been... the F1 theme, and everyone of a certain age, and we're not even that old, is going, first time, you missed out on the best F1 theme of all, which, as we all know, is The Chain.
Yeah, I mean, even the 2008 through, or sort of like 2006 through sort of 2012 theme.
The ITV kind of,
yeah,
that was a good one.
Yeah, that was kind of funky. I kind of liked that. It was a bit weird in its own way. It took me by surprise the first time when it happened on the Sunday afternoon. I was like, hey, this isn't the Brian Tyler theme.
Well,
and then I was like, oh, wait.
Well, it didn't happen in qualifying, though. That's the thing.
Yeah. It only happened on the Sunday. Yeah.
You shimmied it in on the Sunday and you go, off my ears this evening. No, this is excellent. If you're me.
It's a okay, don't get me wrong, it's a good score. It's brilliant music. John Williams, no, what's it? Hans Zimmer,
Hans
great
Zimmer.
when it comes to film scores. However, it just didn't get me as amped up as the Brian Tyler one does. And I don't know if it's because I've grown attached to having the Brian Tyler one there, or because I also listen to the Brian Tyler one as not only my ringtone on my phone, but also the fact that it's on my running tunes playlist. So sort of when I'm
You
doing
like it a
a
bit too much, I
No, but
think,
when
is
I'm
what
doing
I'm about to
a
say.
hard
But
run or a race, it's sort of built into my mind as sort of part of this idea of going fast, of strategy, of a race, of sort of moving through a field. It's sort of, I've accidentally like Pavloved myself into thinking that that is the music you play when motor racing or something involving speed is about to happen. And the result is that sort of a change was thrown in. I went, not sure.
compromise a little and say, I think I would like to see the opening titles edited to fit the music rather than the music put over the titles, because I think it would work really nicely if you had a different opening sequence. And that being said, I think if you're going to stick with the Brian Tyler thing, which I think they're going to, maybe have this as the music you stick over a montage of every single circuit when you first arrive there for a Grand Prix weekend. So you've got archival footage from however long you've been at X circuit, and you have all kind of like the greatest hits with that, because you think it worked so well in the film over that opening sequence. If you had that for where we're going next, Budapest, that could be quite interesting, quite a fun watch, and that'd be a nice way to also get amped up for the Grand Prix, and they would work quite nicely together. So again, a bit of tweaking, easily done though. And I think the fact that we talk about this so much says maybe how exciting the Grand Prix was and how maybe we shouldn't have gotten so amped up for the Grand Prix.
There's definitely a way of feeding it into the main race weekend, but I think also for people who haven't seen the film, certainly my girlfriend messaged me going, "What have they done with the usual theme music?" I was like, "This is the one from the film," which is like, "Oh," I was sort of like, "There you go. That's what it." Yeah.
I think you're only going to be able to appreciate and like it more if you actually have seen it in the film with the scene in question, because that was perfect pairing.
Yeah, but it's perfect pairing there because it was scored and written.
What I'm just saying is, like, you wouldn't have as much of an immediate reaction if you knew it a little bit at least. You're not going, "What the hell is this?"
But
You're
yeah,
going, "Okay, I see what they've done here."
but also it's scored and scripted for that scene. You wouldn't say take Heart Will Go On from Titanic and try and use that as the introductory music to F1 because it's music for a certain scene. It just because it's attached to a film that tells the story of your sport does not mean it will directly transpose.
Might use that after Abu Dhabi if the championship goes a certain way, though. So
Yeah.
that'll be quite a fun montage of stuff to do, that one.
Yeah, I think there'll be
Which
an
wouldn't get me many fans, but I don't think I'd care at that point.
I'll be interested to see your edit of that. Anyway, we'll move on from gossiping about that. We might as well jump into the Grand Prix weekend as it stands. Obviously, it was a sprint weekend, but Timo doesn't really regard the sprint as anything that happens outside the fiction of reality. So,
Did anything happen?
Max Verstappen
No,
showed Oscar
exactly.
Piastri, which
He
actually
did.
was good precursor, actually, because what it does show is that Oscar Piastri pays attention to what happens. And if you want to sort of lean into the conspiracy of Oscar Piastri sort of targeted his qualifying to basically set up to do the same thing, basically knew that he wasn't going to improve on that lap and basically banked a P2. You could launch a conspiracy of that, basically knowing that it would mean he would get the rub of the green and the run down the camel straight against Lando Norris, but that's not what we're going to launch into. We're instead going to launch into actual team-by-team analysis. McLaren started P1 and P2, finished P2 and P1. Norris qualifying on pole, Lando Norris behind him, and they simply inverted the order. And yeah,
Lando
Piastri.
Norris starting on pole and also starting behind him.
You know what I mean. Anyway, Piastri clearly learned across the weekend, repeating Max's move from the sprint on Lando and making it work. And there are two parts to this, actually. I was thinking about this when I went on a run this evening. Lando's self-inflicted issues later on hampered his chase down. However, it is worth remembering that Lando was on the hard tyre, and that was two steps harder than the medium this weekend, offering a far bigger delta for him to overcome on a pace. And I'd wager significantly over half a second a lap, actually. So he had to do a lot of work to really try and close up to Piastri. So it's worth bearing that in mind when you look at the fact that Lando was able to close up to Oscar, was able to make those gains. Plus, the track temperature would have been far lower post-rain and with the cloud cover. It wasn't going to be heating up. It wasn't going to be forcing Oscar's tyres to sort of degrade. We weren't going to see that degradation people would expect from the medium if it were a warmer day. We remember in qualifying was delayed a bit, which meant that the drivers that were going out later and later in each session were gaining that huge advantage as the track temperature dropped away and the tyres stayed alive for longer in the lap. We saw essentially that same pattern appear in the race, the cooler track, allowing those medium tyres to last a lot longer. If it was soft to a medium hard race, it might have been very different. Warmer conditions would have really favoured that longer lasting tyre, even with the McLaren's tyre preserving abilities. Norris had to do something different to Piastri to stand a chance, but that two-step hard and the cold track really played into Oscar's hands at the end of it. He had Oscar needed a second stop, a soft, even a slightly used one, might have given him the edge still over Lando, Charles and Max over the race length worn mediums and hards. So it's a tricky one to sort of play out in the moment. But I think, yeah, Lando needed to make a gamble. Lando needed to try something different. Otherwise, you're just stuck in the wheel tracks of your teammate. And we know that Piastri is quite resilient when it comes to having that pressure from behind.
I think regardless of what Lando did here, the key word used there was self-inflicted. He still made a lot of mistakes on that hard tyre that he could still have easily made on the medium. He, you know, pushing too hard could be one thing, or he was just making mistakes as we've seen him make many a time this season already. I think, ultimately, even if he'd caught up with Piastri, I don't think he would have got past him. He would have had to do it down one of the straights. And I think from what we've seen with Piastri just from his entire career in F1 so far, that's not going to be an easy job of it. And he would have had to be kind of nose to tail close to him to stand a chance of succeeding at that. And even then, he could have still gone the way of Canada. And then we all know what happened there. The thing is, he could have been 2 points ahead of them at the end of this weekend, but he's now 16 behind, which I personally don't have any problems with, but it just shows the difference between the two there. And like you say, what was to stop Lando from looking back at the sprint and seeing what Verstappen had done to him, or to Piastri rather, and trying to see, well, Oscar might try that. Maybe I should see if I could counter that in some way, shape or form. But it looked like one of the easiest overtakes that Piastri has done in recent times. And you kind of paired that also with, I'm not sure if Norris is fully dialed in at Spa ever since his crash. What was it, 21? I want to say the qualifying session where he went up Rouge and absolutely binned it. It was 21 or 22.
21. And
I just don't think he's been dialed in there ever since, really. And you could tell a little bit with the difference in team radio at the start of the race, when the race was actually meant to start, not the hour and 20 afterwards when we finally got going, which there'll be more on that later with some other teams. But it was interesting hearing which drivers were willing to go for it, because they knew that A, rain is the difference maker, B, they know their own capabilities, C, you've got the wet tyres, you've got a bit of a window at that point. It was going to be wet, but you've just done Silverstone in the wet. We've done tons of races in the wet at this point. What's the difference here? Is it just everyone being a little bit overly cautious because it's Spa? Maybe, but then if you're just going to be overcautious with it, don't go racing in the first place. No one's making you go full throttle. No one's making you get in the car in the first place. You could always just do what Lauda did in Japan if you consider yourself too dangerous. No one's forcing you going to how to do any of these things. And as I think Bernie used to say, just drive a little slower. So I found that interesting, because we could have had a very, very different Grand Prix if we'd gone racing an hour sooner. Even if we'd had to stop at one point because of the rain, it would have still been very interesting as a way of spicing that race up. And either way, I think we would have had quite an... Well, anything would have been almost more interesting than the Grand Prix we got in the end. But yeah, I think the combination of all that meant that Piastri just had the advantage. He learned from Saturday. He capitalised immediately, didn't wait around. And he just controlled it and never really looked in doubt. I mean, you heard him on the team radio at several points, and I can't remember who said in commentary, but just sounds as calm as anything, as if he's just going for like a casual Sunday stroll, not even in a car. You know, he's just walking along, just going, Yeah, I suppose we could do that. Yeah, that sounds fine to me. That's all business. And on the other side of it, you've not quite got screaming down the radio, but it seems like that because of how monotone Oscar is. I think that's the key difference with those two drivers.
I know that I've definitely mentioned before sort of the difference in radio communications between Lando and Oscar, the fact that Lando seems to have so much more coaching, so much more detail, so many more questions, so many sort of, we hear so much more come through. And I don't know if that's sort of the actuality of it or if that's simply what's broadcast. Obviously, we take a pinch of salt with that as to what the local broadcaster decides to sort of put through. But with Oscar, certainly in his demeanor, his reaction to it, like you said, he just seems so relaxed with it. But when it comes to that racing in the rain thing, a lot of the drivers, Lewis and Max certainly, said that we should have gone racing earlier. We should have started at 2 o'clock. After those two laps behind the safety car, it was clear enough to really start getting going.
They've raced in works.
And equally, had they started racing at that point, while there wasn't rain coming out of the sky, they would have been drying out the track, which would have made the actual surface more resilient to any rain that later came. You wouldn't have as much standing water buildup. You wouldn't have as much spray buildup because you've already cleared a load of the water. It's not making the problem.
So either way, if you're stopping the race or if you keep going, you've still got something quite interesting happen.
Yeah, I think they should have set them off earlier and we would have seen a...
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Far more interesting race because of the way that Spa is a very aggressive circuit on tire compounds. You only have to look at how quickly on those opening laps, even on the lap to the grid, we saw drivers blow through a set of intermediates. You force drivers to start racing in that and you start to get some very interesting moves as drivers are sort of like, do I try and make these inters last out until the rain because we know that pocket of dry weather is coming, or do I accept that I'm going to have to do a pit stop onto a second set of inters and go from there, or even a third set of inters? You get teams rolling the dice when it comes to strategy. We saw a few teams rolling dice and splitting strategies across cars, which gave us an interesting sort
of... nowhere near as interesting drivers. As it could have been had we started to...
Nowhere as interesting as it could have been. We sort of got this little tease of it in some drivers doing one way, some drivers doing another. And for most drivers, or sort of 50% of them, it did backfire horrendously. But if we had had that sort of... incentive to go racing on the wets, incentive to go racing on the intermediates, it's still that running joke of why the hell do we have wet tires if we so seldom use them? It's because of the visibility. We figured out we can't do anything with the spray. You see, that's why we have the rain lights. You see, even in the spray, drivers move out. You just move out into the clear bit of track. While you don't get the tow, which is vital down things like the Camel Straight and on the run out of Port Frere down towards the bus stop chicane, you just move out and you see what you're doing, you can plan it, and you go from there. And I think that there is sort of, there wasn't this motivation to do it from the F1 sort of hierarchy and from the FIA, and I think they should have gone for it. I've seen classics racing worse. I've seen historic series at
Spa. Formula 2 arguably raced in worse earlier the same day.
Yeah, and I mean, you get other racing series race and worse at Spa as well. You've got to look at like sort of your WEC series and your Freckers and your GT series that will race in just as wet conditions. I don't know why F1 gets so prissy about it. And I think that, yeah, I appreciate it's dangerous. That is the nature of motorsport. But equally at the same time, the improvements to Spa, both in its safety around the circuit and the sort of actual track itself, we should be able to take those risks with relative comfort. You might crash, you might end up in the barrier. And I say that this...
You could do that in a perfectly dry race anyway. That's always the risk. And it separates, in this case, still the men from the boys, and we get proper interesting race because we get to see who's going to be ballsy with it, who's going to leave it out there. And you think about the likes of Verstappen, Hamilton, Alonso, Hülkenberg. It's their kind of playground. They love that stuff. And you think, it doesn't matter if you've got an Aston Martin at that point, you're Fernando Alonso, and you can just go play Mario Kart.
Well, this was the thing. The two of the drivers that were quite outspoken about the fact that we should have just gone racing earlier were Verstappen and Hamilton, two drivers that love wet and changeable conditions and are prepared to lay it on the line every weekend.
If you'd said prior to the weekend, we're going to get a wet race and we're going to have Verstappen and Hamilton battling it out for the podium in these wet conditions, you go, oh, okay, now we're talking. And instead we got...
Yeah, instead we got sort of nothing. We're going to wait for it to dry. And if we're going to wait for it to dry, can we not get like the giant hairdryer thing that NASCAR has that is sent out around Indy ahead of the weekend? Because if we're going to be that silly about it, we might as well speed up the process a little bit. I'm sorry. But anyway, moving on from McLaren to Ferrari, who are still second in the championship, but the entirety of their points doubled now away from the back of McLaren. So they're a long way off McLaren's standings, but they're second. Charles Leclerc qualified third and would finish third. And Lewis Hamilton qualified 16th, but would start from the pit lane after taking new engine components. I would finish seventh, a good recovery from him.
Reason that the race should have started sooner, quite crucially, is because while that is an impressive finishing result considering where he started, he had a rear wing on his car fitted as part of the reason from starting the pit lane, which much more favoured the wet conditions. So if they'd been in those conditions, seventh would have looked pitiful as a result for him, because he could have actually been up and made my prediction come true and come home on the podium even. I mean, we saw how quickly he was slicing through traffic at the early part of the race before the eventual pit, and then the drying out conditions. But I thought it was a shame that we couldn't get more from him, because he looked really, really alive there. And it's why I'm still not too worried about Ferrari and about Hamilton in particular. He made comments prior to the weekend about having seen the likes of Raikkonen and Vettel and Alonso be at Ferrari, and none of them were able to become champion, and how he refuses point blank for the same to happen to him. And I think for once, being a bit on the older side of the F1 grid is an advantage here, because he's not going to be patient. He's not going to wait for them to get their thumb out, essentially, and make the changes. He's going to make it happen himself one way or another, so that at least, even if he doesn't get that title with them, he'll know it wasn't because they didn't throw everything at it, including the kitchen sink. And some of that was evident here this weekend with his mentality, but also some of it kind of what Ferrari were doing, perfect demonstration of what they need to sort out. Again, maybe it was just the race director, EV director, that is kind of discretion of what we saw and what we heard, but the impression we got after qualifying, certainly, I don't know if you saw this, was that he was almost back into the pits after his cool down lap after Q1 before he found out that he'd been knocked out, because they hadn't told him yet. And he had to ask them himself, and you're kind of going, he doesn't care if it's good or bad news to an extent. He just wants to know, because if it's bad, he's got those extra few seconds to think while he's given the car, what can we do differently so that we can capitalize on this mistake or whatever. And it's not even the first time we've heard this sort of thing from Ferrari, and just come to the kind of almost fearful way his race engineer came on the radio, and kind of fearful but also not caring. It was the weird combination, just didn't invoke any confidence whatsoever, and you just go, why is he having to deal with this kind of nonsense? This is the fundamentals. We've said this so many times this season already about Ferrari, but it's the bread and butter stuff. How are you cocking that up still? Whereas Leclerc, he's had the parts in his car, the upgrades that Hamilton's just got since Canada, I think. He's more used to them. He's clearly making them work, and that's why, despite all of what I've just said, I'm not too worried about Ferrari, and I think they are, despite their best efforts at times, moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think with Ferrari, it's a very interesting one. Obviously, Charles sort of understands how to get the most out of Ferrari as a team at the moment, and Lewis is still learning.
Been there long enough at this point. He's learned all the cheat codes.
Yeah, and Lewis, meanwhile, I think he's in the process of sort of writing letters, quite literally, actually, to sort of the different department heads saying, look, this is what I feel we need to do to improve. This is what we need to do to improve. And again, I think a lot of this still bucks its way up the train past Fred Vasseur to John Elkann. Something needs to change. And as the executive officer overseeing Ferrari, it's the buck stops with him, unfortunately, and he's going to have to do something about it. I will say, however, to err on the side of Ferrari, they were running new compound brake pads this weekend and brake sort of product.
Which for Lewis, that is.
For Lewis, that is, which I think he got to grips with very well. And obviously, it sort of proved quite sort of a stable and reliable compound once he'd got used to it.
He requested that he wanted more sensitive ones anyway. And that was the reason for a spin in sprint qualifying, was him just getting used to it. So it's kind of, it's fair enough. That I don't begrudge them, that because you're doing what he's asking you there. But I think, again, it's like, oh, you can do that, so why can't you do this, which should be easier.
I probably wouldn't have brought them in on a sprint weekend, though, when you've not got three practice sessions to get used to them and dial
Ferrari's
in.
still going to be Ferrari. We can't change everything.
We can't have everything. But at the same, so it was a good recovery from Lewis. And again, you see a race go like that for him, and you sort of see a race that has so much change in it, but so much success. You go, there is clearly still this Lewis magic to it. And it is clearly just a case of he is taking a year to build this team a lot closer to around him. So he has got that opportunity to perform next season. When it comes to the track,
strikes me as a combination of Lauda in Rush and the head of Ford, I want to say, in Le Mans 66, before Matt Damon takes him out in the car and scares the shit out of him, probably quite literally, in going, you think you know what's going on. You think you know what to do and what's best here. Here's why you're wrong and why you should leave us to deal with it, or put someone else in charge who can think more along the same lines as we can, because otherwise you're not going to get what you want here, which is what we all want in the grand scheme of things. That's it.
Yeah, it's Lauda arriving at Ferrari going, it's a shit box, and it's John Ford II being taken out in the prototype GD40 and scared witless. But yeah, when it comes to Leclerc, though, did well to fend off Max Verstappen in the race too. You've got to bear in mind, this is Max Verstappen, who absolutely loves those changeable, those wet, those slidey conditions, who is in an upgraded Red Bull as well. And all the time, Charles was running out of tyres far quicker than the Red Bull, but still was able to keep that Max Verstappen behind him. So a really solid effort from Charles. And I think all in all, if you're Ferrari, it might not look it on paper, but you can walk away from this weekend with your head held high and go, you know what, that wasn't that bad. I think we've come away as probably the
same. Show Charles's kind of continued maturity, because you put, I don't say any other driver, but most other drivers on the grid in his position, and Max is getting past. He's going to find a way. He's going to bait you into a mistake at some point. But Charles is, he's learned from 22 in particular. Still, that was evident quite often since then. Whenever he does have to fight him, is that he, even if he loses, he's not losing in the same way. It feels like he's able to play the game a little bit more, and he knows what he's capable of, because he's had to go toe to toe with him a few times in the past. And that kind of shows him, he knows what to expect.
He knows how to make Max Verstappen play the game as well. And I think Max respects him hugely and is also willing to play that game and to properly race him. And you do see this really engaged racecraft from the two of them when they go head to head. I think this weekend, Charles Leclerc had the edge on him. I think it's fair to say that this time round, Charles was the better driver and had the overall better weekend from it. Meanwhile, still in third place in the standings, Mercedes, Russell qualified sixth, Antonelli having a shocker and qualifying 18th, eventually starting for the pit lane. Russell would finish fifth, getting Alex Albon through the start procedure of the race, and Kimi Antonelli would finish 16th. So,
not much to say here, really, is there on the whole? I mean, Russell just again doing what he does best, which is being Charles Leclerc from last year and just minding his own business and getting on with things. And Antonelli, yeah, we thought, obviously Silverstone, we didn't get to see what he was fully capable of, because Hadjar driven the back of him. But we thought Spa, we'd get to see a bit more from that, because we saw what he did in F2 last year in wet conditions. He was quite decent there, when Silverstone in particular stands out. This year, and particularly this recent run of races, you'd think that he's trodden on the same kind of voodoo doll that the Williams drivers have in terms of bad luck. Because he's just not been there, and he's continuing to struggle, and it's not quite clear why. These are tracks he's been to before. It's not brand new ones either. And there you could forgive a little bit more, because, you know, still learning the track, the sim's only so good and all the rest of it. But he's been to Spa a couple of times. He's raced in wet conditions, and he's just struggling. And I do wonder about it. And the talk has obviously gone down about Mercedes and who's going to be driving for them the next year, but this was also just going to be part of the risk of putting a rookie, even if it's Kimi Antonelli, into a top team. And when that doesn't go well for whatever reason, that's going to cost you. And it's sort of potentially the best year to do it, because Red Bull's not going to catch you and Williams isn't going to catch you, and you definitely don't have to worry about anyone below them catching you and the constructors. But all the same, if this trajectory continues, and even if he recovers at some point, which I'm sure he will, I wonder how much damage would have been done and what that gulf to Ferrari looks like by the end of the season. Because I know that the amount of money won't change in terms of how much they get for P2 and P3 is not based on the point differential between the two. And always, you outscore them by X amount, and we're going to give you a bonus. But it's still going to be on the minds, I think, of certain people.
Yeah, I mean, as it stands, they're only 28 points shy of Ferrari, which isn't as big a gulf as you'd think, given the performances. And
But
but
consider there's a disqualification for Ferrari involved in that from China still.
yeah, and they are 28 points, funnily enough, clear of Red Bull as well. So they're sort of in a fairly sound place. But at the same time, when it comes to Antonelli, he has DNF'd twice and scored in the bottom 20 twice since Canada. His performance has just tumbled off. It's been so hit and miss for him all season long. And you look at sort of where he's come, you sort of go that fourth in Australia, great. China Sprint seventh, China sixth, Japan sixth, Saudi Arabia sixth, Miami Sprint seventh, Miami sixth. You've got this fairly good consistency of always being in that sort of where you're expecting those top three teams to finish. You expect your McLaren, you expect your Ferraris, you expect your two Mercedes. So he's always been pretty much there, and then just sort of falls into a bit of rough luck. Imola, mechanical failure, fair enough, not him.
You know, Jacques Villeneuve is going to say all this started when he brought his friends to the track with him at Imola, and that's been the downfall ever
Too
since
many
then.
distractions, yeah. Monaco, I can't remember what went wrong for him in Monaco. Was it bad qualifying and then just sort of didn't get a lap in, stuck at the back? Spain, I
Something like
think,
that.
was a
He
mechanical.
clipped the wall, didn't he?
Yeah, he did in qualifying, yeah. Spain, mechanical failure. Canada, podium, P3 out of nowhere. Austria, I can't remember what went wrong for him, DNF'd out of it.
He drove into Max.
Did he? Oh yeah, he did, didn't he, on the opening lap? Yeah. Britain got crashed into the back of Byers at Qajar, and then Belgium sprint 17th, Belgium 16th. So not a lot of those bad results have come from his own effort, I think is fair to say. Belgium and Austria, potentially the only two that you can really classify as his own issues, as well as Monaco, but at Monaco you don't get a chance to rectify it in the race. So
It just
it's
doesn't have, just seem to have that time to turn it around for whatever reason.
yeah.
Like, we had a gap between two.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
But that clearly didn't work enough. So I don't know. I mean, maybe we'll be sitting here this time next week and saying how wonderfully he did in Budapest, but I think the summer break is going to be exactly what he needs, because I think even if your intention is to turn the negative momentum around, actually doing it, especially if you then become on the back foot immediately into a weekend, is then quite difficult, compounded by the fact that it's a sprint weekend on a track that, okay, you've been there a couple of times before, but maybe with the car and any changes they make, maybe there's too much at the moment and he's just not having enough time to figure it all out. I don't know. It's
Yeah.
interesting though, and you wonder again, because I think it was Albon who said this in an interview prior to the race weekend last week, that I don't think he has one now, but he used to, and he knows a few other drivers potentially do at the moment, and it's something that Martin Blair, a friend of the podcast, has said a few times, is that why are there no driver coaches specifically for certain things, in particular, at least, in the F1 team? Just because they've got that doesn't mean they're all perfect drivers. Otherwise, what would we be talking about every week? And Kimi maybe could benefit from one of those. I mean, they all could, let's face it.
Yeah, you're only as good as your ability to keep learning, I think, is the important thing. And especially in sports, your ability to keep developing and keep honing skills. And I think that Mercedes have just sort of taken their foot off the gas with Antonelli. I think they've gone like, yeah,
And we've developed him now.
F1,
He's in F1.
you're here,
Done.
job done. And they've just sort of forgotten that he is still only, what, 18. He still needs coaching and sort of guiding through this and sort of teaching how to build a season, how to rebuild himself after a run of bad races as well, some of which, as we've just stated, weren't his fault. Russell, I think, really quiet one for him, but a really good one. Got Albon out of the way early on, which proved valuable because the whole pack got really stagnant as the sort of laps went by. So he got the move done while he had the tyres. And that was it, just sort of left Albon in the middle of nowhere and sort of ended up in the middle of nowhere himself. Only towards the end did he start really closing in on Verstappen and Leclerc ahead, because we know that
I don't
Russell.
think anyone really ever thought that that was going to be anything that developed into anything.
No,
So,
he started closing in but sort of ran out of laps. And yeah, we know Russell can go a long distance on a set of slightly softer tyres than anyone anticipates at Spa. Big whoop. Meanwhile, we move to Red Bull. Verstappen qualifies fourth, finishes fourth. Tsunoda qualifies seventh, his best qualifying position while at Red Bull, and finishes 13th. And worth pointing out as well, while there is a bit of obviously a position gap, Tsunoda's pace not actually that far off Verstappen's in qualifying, at least. And yeah, it did help that finally Lauren Mekies went in and went, why are the two cars not the same? Let's put them both with the same parts and machinery and then see if we can get them a bit closer together. And yeah, that worked. Then Mekies did hold up his hands and apologise for getting Tsunoda's race wrong, though bad strategy, bad calls, wrong timing. He held his hands up and said that was all on our side of the pit wall. So yeah, hopefully we'll see a better series of outings from car 22 as the season passes, but Max did all right, but I think that car has reached its ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, Verstappen does what Verstappen does. That's the easy bit there. I mean, I think this sprint win shows, though, that he's still in this as a wild card. He's not in this for the championship. Something really monumental has to happen out front for two or three Grand Prix, I think, for Max to be back in contention. But he's one of these drivers that's a little bit like Hülkenberg, as we referred to earlier on in the season. He's got absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain from just doing whatever he wants, more so than potentially ever before. He's got nothing left to prove. He's won four championships in four different ways. He's in a team that is, he's sort of the dog in the meme with the house burning around him going, this is fine. And he's just kind of getting on with his own business. So I like the chaotic Verstappen potentially that we can have as part of this, because he's not going to be too fussed if it doesn't go wrong, but then he's going to celebrate like he did in Japan when he got that pole position and when he got that victory when it goes so right, because he knows that he's out driving that car. And it's him doing that extra little bit to prove himself, even though he doesn't need to show a little bit like he did last year with how he won that title with the third best car. It's this extra kind of talking point we'll have for the future for when we're ranking best drivers of all time. Tsunoda did have a good qualifying. Nice to see, a little bit like Lewis with Charles, getting the same kind of specs finally as your teammate and seeing, does that work for you? Does it not? Poor strategy obviously cost him, lack of pace cost him in the race as well. And I'm not sure how much the strategy, I mean, the strategy obviously hampered him, but I think the lack of pace in particular just didn't help him get double whammied at the end by Berman and Hülkenberg. It was the opposite problem to Russell in terms of Russell needed a couple more laps to maybe have a think about going after Max and Charles. Yuki didn't need any extra laps whatsoever and would have quite happily gone, we did two earlier under the safety car, let's count those, because that would have helped him. And I think the only saving grace for him there is that he only went from P11 to P13, so at least he didn't actually miss any points. And the disappointing thing for me is the fact that he did drop out so early in the grand scheme of things of the points when he started in P7. He shows he was able to do that one lap pace, but he still just wasn't able to get that 10th place. And when you look at who did get the 10th place, who did get the 9th place, and who got 8th place, that's where my problem is. And I know that strategy definitely played a part in that. And Mekies, yeah, fair enough, holding up hands and apologising, but it's again, amusing, it's always the second car Red Bull, it's never the first car. But also, you are meant to know what you're doing with this. It's kind of seems a weird time to fumble the ball on something that you've been doing pretty well for the odd 800 years we were talking about him being around in F1 the other day. So it's a mixed bag, but I think I just needed, if he'd finished P10, I'd have taken that, because it still would have been a lot better than most of what he's done this season. So it was a shame on that regard. And I think, yeah, Red Bull, again, it's just this inferno with Max in the middle just going, I'm just going to mind my own business and just keep focusing on the book I'm reading here and you just do whatever the hell you're doing.
Yeah, I think Yuki could have done with more of an F2 situation. He could have done with Montoya chucking it off the top of Radeon, and then could have done with Oliver Goethe blowing up an engine coming out of Le Source. It would have been just sort of perfect timing for Tsunoda, but did not fall his way. But I think his pace was good. The problem is that his strategy was so mangled that he wasn't able to maintain that pace towards the end, and that's why we saw that drop-off starting to come through. But and also at the same time, he's got a load of upgrades dumped onto a car that he only had one practice session to get used to. And he is not, at the end, and as much as I like Yuki Tsunoda, he is not a Max Verstappen, he is not a Lewis Hamilton, he's not a Charles Leclerc, he's not able to get up to speed of a car that's been upgraded and changed overnight and all of a sudden just be able to perform in it. It's going to take him those practice sessions to get used to it. So I'm hoping we'll see a more reflective performance from him in Hungary. However, if Hungary is warm, I think we might see a better chance, because I think the Mercedes is going to struggle in Hungary. But we'll talk about that when we get to it on Wednesday. Next up, Williams. Albon Q5, finished P6. Sainz qualified 15th, started from the pit lane, finished P18.
Yeah. It was very Tale of Two Cities, this one, wasn't it? It's great for Albon. I mean, Christ, he's needed a good Grand Prix weekend for a while now. So for him to get into fifth, it itself, you can have still for a while. Nicer it's been to stay there, but 10th I'd have taken, 9th I'd have taken. So if him to only lose one position was pretty darn good. And he put up a great defence to Hamilton as well for the majority of the race. He, again, I think he did what we were talking about prior to the race weekend in our preview, where he just made the car as wide as possible, and Hamilton, try as he might, even with the annoying rear wing on the car, wasn't able to get past him. Sainz, though, yeah, he just didn't look there at all this weekend. Lost out massively, and we'll get to some championship movement later on when we're talking about other teams, but he is so far behind where we would have thought he would have been, and definitely further behind where he thought he would have been, because he was saying, I think at the start of the season, it'll take me 9 or 10 races and then I'll be there. Race 13. And I'm thinking you may have underestimated challenge at hand here.
Yeah, Alex's performance, I'll get that out of the way first. It was a belter, and the car is clearly there, or at least he's certainly used to the car. I think the issue for Sainz this weekend was that Williams admitted to getting his setup wrong as well, opting for that full wet setup from the off, and it just never came to fruition because the race transitioned to dry before they even really went out to do anything meaningful. So his wet, and it meant that his sort of wet slash intermediate pace was about a second lap off of Albon, compounded further by a 6-second pit stop. It just tumbled him down the order, which meant that as soon as you're off the back of the train, which at sort of Spa, you need to be in that dirty air, in that train, to basically get towed from the source all the way to Le Comme and down into sort of the hairpin. If you're not there, it is a huge fight. We saw that from Pierre Gasly chasing to catch up to the field in the sprint race. So it's sort of as soon as you drop out of that field, we saw it with Ocon as well in the Grand Prix, as soon as you're let go from that pack, it's so hard to catch up. It's sort of become almost NASCAR-ish in the way that the draft is so important. And that really sort of hampered Sainz. I think it'd be easy to criticise his run, but you've got to factor in the other elements of the weekend. You've got to factor in the fact that a 6-second pit stop, when there is also such a huge pit stop delta at Spa as well, I think it's at 19 seconds as a conventional 19, 22 seconds. As soon as you start adding more time to that, it's a big pit stop to get wrong. And if you've got a teammate that's sailing through on a 19 and you're coming out the far end, at the best case scenario, at 25, that's a big difference to then start trying to make up to your teammate, let alone people that have qualified around your end of the field. Williams, I think, were at fault with that one more so than Sainz, I'd say. But I think, yeah, we want to start...
A little bit like Antonelli, it doesn't help playing into the wider narrative.
The wider narrative.
Not where we thought you would be.
Yeah, the wider narrative of the fact that I think we went into this season all thinking that Sainz was going to absolutely dominate Alex Albon. But I think this is another year of everyone completely underrating Alex Albon, because he seemed untouchable compared to Sainz. And that's the thing.
Albon is this fascinating character, because I think you've got a driver there where we've still not really seen what he's capable of, because he's a bit like George Russell in that sense. And even George Russell, to some extent, we've not seen properly what he's capable of, because he seems to just not like be in the right car to fully unlock his potential. But Lando and Albon, I think, are the two that you should compare here in terms of how they present themselves and how they are as drivers, because Lando always says he wants to be the nice guy. He's like, I want to be known for being the nicest person, the nicest world champion if I get there, and all this sort of thing. And that's well and good. Albon presents himself very nicely, but we've seen him on track, and then it switches and he's kind of in demon mode. You saw that in Monaco. Like, I don't give a shit. I will buy you dinner afterwards because we're friends, but I'm going to make this car as wide as possible, and you ain't getting past me without crashing into me, and then you're still not getting past. And I think that's where you kind of everyone just assumes Alex is this nice kind of plodding along sort of person. And he's not necessarily John Wick, but he's not necessarily not John Wick. And I think that's the thing. We can all kind of go, yeah, if we annoy him, he's not going to turn into the Baba Yaga. But if you do that to help one, he might, because we just don't know enough about him yet, because we've not, partly because we've not seen him in the right circumstances to see what he can do, but also just because you see teases of it that I don't think we see with someone like Mando, as the obvious kind of comparison, because I can't think of any other drivers who are nice, if you know what I mean. Like, they all kind of have a certain aggressiveness to them through, like, in a different way, and the ones that we don't know are just kind of probably the rookies. They're still trying to figure out what they are.
Yeah, I think Behrman is possibly the closest I could get to that argument, but Piastri, I think, to a certain extent, and this is an interesting thing. At Festival of Speed, Alain Prost was talking on sort of the balcony about the current season. He said that he's absolutely fascinated by sort of the similar qualities that he shares with Oscar Piastri. The fact that Piastri never go for a move that's got an element of risk to it, when he's always thinking about the season, is Piastri. He's thinking about the race, but his mind is always on the season. And the fact that we saw that a bit with Piastri in the sprint, on the fact that he let Verstappen go. He thought there was no point fighting this, having a hastily rebuilt car and potentially not running in the Grand Prix where the big points are. I'll come away from this with my second place in the sprint. I'll be happy. And then just sort of this really clean, mechanical, but when the moment calls for it, absolutely whip-sharp, brutal mentality of, I'm going to come past you. You will not come back past me. That is the end of the matter. And you sort of go, we never see any of this in Oscar Piastri that exists outside of it. Also, at the same time, the Oscar Piastri that exists outside of racing is just sort of a bit of an anathema. We don't know a great deal about him. He just sort of exists.
He is Kimi Raikkonen's son.
Yeah, he just exists to go on his little racing simulator at home and do nothing. And you're sort of like, you're a mystery to me, and I like that. I want to.
I don't need to know anymore. Racing. Yeah, this is perfect.
Yeah, and I think he is. I think it is fair to say that he is sort
if,
of.
If Top Gear was still going and they revealed him as the Stig, or they'd gone to a Stig farm and just taken the helmet off one of the ones they were growing, you'd believe it. You'd go, yes, of course. That is the Stig.
Yeah. He has so little to say, and he is ruthlessly quick. And you sort of go, yeah, no, checks out. But yeah, it was interesting, sort of even Alain Prost going, I sort of see something interesting in this guy that I know that I tried to embody when
Team I was... Piastri saying I'm probably an eighth French.
It will come. There will sort of... Someone will make a joke with Nicole Piastri on a podcast that maybe she at one point unknowingly slept with Alain Prost. Although she was actually in the Red Bull hospitality this weekend, because she got to finally go and meet Yuki Tsunoda, who she is... It's sort of been like a long-running internet joke that he is her adoptive son, which was quite sweet. But anyway, that aside, we'll move to Sauber, who are still in P6 in the standings. Gabriel Bortoleto qualified 10th, finished 9th, Hülkenberg 14th to 12th. And yeah, Gabby up to speed solidly now. The car is clearly underneath both drivers. They know what they're doing with the machinery. This weekend, I think, was just a case of too many teams scrapping for the top 10 to have both of them in there. It's a close midfield now, and that season-long fight is going to be interesting. Like we've seen with years gone by, the midfield is always the interesting bit, that interesting battle for 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th. And especially this year, where we've got so many of those midfield teams that are converging on pace, it really depends on how well you can get your circuit-specific setup done.
Yeah, I did think ahead of the Grand Prix, it would be quite funny now if Hulk just started podiuming regularly. He's got that first another way, and now he's like, it's quite easy, this, actually. I'm just going to go and do that again. But unfortunately, we didn't quite get that. I thought it was quite nice of him, though, to play the team game and qualifying, because he was clearly giving Bortoleto a toe and to help him get into Q3. And I like that I like it when teams are in this phase. They're building up to be a top team. They're nowhere near yet, so they don't mind working together and sharing data, because it's all for the good of the team. And when Bortoleto succeeds, Hulk celebrates. When Hulk succeeds, Bortoleto celebrates. And I love that whole element of it. You're getting quite a bit of that IndyCar this year with a lot of the teams further down the order. And to see Bortoleto get points, you loved it. And again, started in 10th, finished in 9th. Capitalised on Yuki falling out of the top 10. Hülkenberg moved up a couple of positions, but again, capitalised on Yuki admittedly again at the end, got past him very nicely. Even if it's just P12, it's one of those things, like you say, when you have the constructors battle that tight in that mid pack, some of the time it's decided on countback, on results, on these sort of things. So, yeah, it's only one position. Yeah, you're not getting any points, but I'd like to think Hulk has been around long enough to know that sort of every little helps, as it were. And, yeah, I thought it was just satisfying to overtake a Red Bull in a Sauber.
Yeah, I think while Alex Albon keeps putting in these sort of fairly incredible performances in that Williams, they're currently on 70 points ahead of Sauber on 43. But then you look back at where sort of the rest of the constructors are behind them. He says, scrolling to the right bit of his...
So they're all in a very, very tight pack.
Yeah, RB 31, Aston Martin 36, Haas 35, Alpine 20. So even as much as we sort of deride Alpine for being sort of backmarkers, really...
Well, it is just Gasly getting points there, let's face it. They are kind of driving one hand behind their back.
It's Gasly doing all that legwork, but then you sort of go, okay, but it doesn't take Aston Martin to have another flub weekend and Gasly to sort of sneak in sort of a seventh or something. And he's tiptoeing closer and closer to where they are in the standings. Like, that spread from, 43 back to 20, it's a 23-point gap, which covers five teams. We were saying that, like, Mercedes and Ferrari are relatively close, and they've got a 28-point gap between them, and that's just splitting two teams. So 23 points covering five teams is really close.
You needed Brazil from last year to happen for one of the teams, and...
I mean, we've seen at Hungary, you often get like a weird backmarker get a surprisingly strong result. It wouldn't surprise me if we end up with that again this weekend coming.
Speaking, I wouldn't mind if it happened for the next team.
No, it would be really for them,
considering the dynamics at play there.
Yeah, it would be really interesting if we had this next team get one. Racing Bulls, Hadjar qualified 8th, finished 20th. Lawson qualified 9th, finished 8th. Liam's slow march up the order is a good sign. I'd be curious to unpick really what went wrong for Isaac here. I don't think a lot of it was down to his pace. I think a lot of it was sort of team issues.
It's too big a drop-off for it to be him. The season he's been having.
Yeah, it can't be just him that's gone wrong. There's got to be something else there. But much like Haas, Sauber, Williams and partly Aston Martin, as we've already said, it's that midfield fight where one slight slip has massive impact. But yeah, Lawson coming home with another bunch of points is really solid for him.
Yeah, not much to say on Hadjar there, just didn't work. But William Lawson, he's ahead of Yuki in the championship now, and somehow just 4 points away from both Sainz and Alonso, considering the performances that Sainz and Alonso are having at the moment. And if we got a bit of topsy-turvy race in Budapest, he could go into the summer break ahead of both of them, which would just be insane, and quite the turnaround from China, let's say, at the start of the season, from when things were a little bit different for him. And yeah, it's just nice to see the team dynamics there. I don't know if you saw as well prior to the weekend some of the pre-race content they were doing on social media. In particular, one homage to a British Nature documentary show from years and years ago. Did you see this?
No, I don't think I did.
Calling out the name of their new team principal.
Oh, no, I did see this one, yeah. Alan.
I thought that was very nicely done by the three of them there. And I thought, I don't often look at all this kind of stuff because I don't care for it, but that one, I thought, I'll give it credit where it's due. That was quite fun.
Yeah.
And just Permain just sticking his head out from random locations around the Racing Bulls hospitality.
Yeah. I will interrupt briefly before we move on to Aston Martin. I know we mentioned quite a few podcasts back that Disney have got a upcoming sort of collaboration with Formula One. There has been a bit of a leak of some sort of high-vis building work tabards suggesting the Formula One Disney Cruise Line, Formula One Castaway K Disney Grand Prix in 2028. A quick Google reveals Castaway K is a small sort of out-island in the Bahamas. And obviously with Cadillac sure to be on the grid at this point, offering up at least the opportunity for another seat, this does at least offer a gap for one of our favourite drivers from the Caribbean, our Barbudan boy. Not at that cost, but there's the tabard from the work site. There's where it's all coming to.
I'm hoping it's just for an app for a Mickey Mouse going racing game, because that would be...
I don't even think the Bahamas have a race circuit that could be upgraded enough to...
Bushy Park.
Bahamas.
Bahamas, Barbados, but you know.
Barbados, yeah. Bahamas.
Close enough.
They do have Speed Week, which is like a classic motor racing event, and they do have Nassau.
Different from having a circuit.
Nassau Oaks Field, which does look like quite a fun little circuit, but I don't think it's really been used since 1966, so it could take quite a lot of work to get it back.
Was Fangio getting kidnapped when they last used it?
No, 1957 and...
Not far,
1957 was an old layout of it. Their last run in 1966, so we're talking sort of the tail end of like the Dan Gurney's and your Stirling Mosses, really, at that point. Yeah.
Less said about this, the better, I think.
Yeah, it has now completely been redeveloped, and there is a giant sports stadium now where it stands. But F1 isn't unaccustomed to weaving race circuits around sports stadiums. Oh, that is interesting. Anyway, back to schedule planning. Aston Martin. Alonso qualified 19th, would start from the pit lane and would finish 17th. Stroll qualified 20th and finished 14th. A surprisingly decent outing for Stroll, but yeah, I'm still left
14th after being bog last is hardly something to write home about, is it?
Yeah, and when, yeah, most of those people around you started in the pit lane, therefore promoting you up anyway, you're sort of like...
Pretty much, what was it, 15th anyway? So we made it one position in the race at best.
Yeah, all second thoughts, maybe I'm less impressed by that. I don't know. I just don't have anything to say about Aston Martin off back this week.
Well, then let's just move on to Haas.
Do you have anything to say?
The ones that look scrappy at times, but the car's abysmal. I don't really have anything else on that one because what the hell is there to say?
Scrappy and abysmal. Good enough. Haas. Ocon qualified 11th, finished 15th, and Behrmann qualified 12th and finished 11th. I think this was a bit like...
He had a great sprint race.
Very good sprint race. Double points in the sprint race. Really good from Haas. But I think for the Grand Prix, a bit like many of the other teams, a gamble on who went in which direction, and Ocon's race was ruined by a gaffe strategy, despite the drying conditions, which should have paid dividends running that tiny wing. Behrmann's consistency is brilliant, though. And again, another suffery of the closeness of that midfield with a fourth consecutive 11th place finish. That puts him on like sort of a new record for like most finishes in a place that isn't first. So,
yeah, it's getting to the part of the statistics textbook that has got some cobwebs on it because you're going, really? We're having to dive this far down to find something? Can we just focus on the sprint race points?
Corner of the statistics list of sort of like most races.
Yeah, this didn't work out for you, so now we're going to transfer that to Behrmann.
Yeah, I think there was some good in that Haas, but unfortunately their sort of main qualifying and the strategy sort of let them down a little bit. Ollie Behrmann, though, did ask me for some pictures from Festival Speed, actually. He sent me a little message saying, can I send over the pictures of him doing the massive burnout on the start line? So I sent him over a little transfer, and he sent me a voice note saying, thank you. It sounded like he was in the back of a minibus at the time, so possibly...
He might have been, you don't know.
Possibly either waiting for his transfer from that racetrack he was at in Sweden where he'd broken the karting lap record, or either on his way already to Spa from the UK. But yeah, nice guy. Anyway, Alpine. Gasly qualified 13th, finished 10th, nabbed that final points playing place, and Colapinto qualified 17th, finished 19th. So went backwards.
Well, yep. Gasly deserves a better car, I think, because he's doing some impressive things with Alpine. He's a driver where he's been around for a good while now, and I blow hot and cold with him, to be honest. I wouldn't lose too much sleep if he disappeared off the grid, but at the same time, I think it'd be more of a shame for me if he left than what I felt when Bottas went or when Perez went, for example. I think because at least with them, they got the chance and we saw what they're capable of, and then, yeah, things didn't work out, but you got way more than you probably thought you were going to, if we're all being quite frank and honest about it. Whereas Gasly, he had that magical day in Monza, and he's had these renders here and there with these podiums, but we've not seen what he can truly do yet. He's another one of these ones like George Russell and Albon. He's kind of further down on that list, but he's been there longer than both of them. I want more for him. I don't think Alpine's the place for it, at least not in its current guise. It's got a great livery, but it's really the only thing the car's got going for it. Whereas on the other side of it, Colapinto, I mean, he's still the only driver on the grid with 0 points. And I just, what is the justification for keeping him? What has he done that makes him so much better than Doohan? I'm still going to be playing on that one. Ricardo's gone. I've got a new Aussie that I'm going to be fixated on now. It's going to be Jack Doohan. And we're all just going to have to deal with that. Really, what has he done that justifies it? I mean, I'm not expecting you to actually have an answer to this because good luck spinning it, but just anyone listening, please call me. Please tell me. Franco, tell me yourself.
Does the sponsorship money he brings really make up for the sort of dire results? I don't know. Because if you're Jack and Mick Doohan at this point, you must be chuckling away quite heartily.
You're doing Clarkson's proper hearty laugh whenever he sees me doing something. He's bent over double going, really, this is the guy you chose? And you're going, maybe get on the phone to Piastri going, I know you're pretty sorted at McLaren, but do you have anywhere else that you could maybe get Mark on the phone? Does he know anything that could help us out here?
I think the Colapinto Pinto thing, I'm still baffled on. I'm like, okay, you brought him in. He's proven exactly what we all anticipated him proving, which is that the car is a bit shit and it needs a relatively good driver to get anything close to something from it. We saw how long it took Ocon and Gasly to try and get anything from it last season. And we're seeing the fact that Gasly is having to drive the absolute wheels off the thing to get anything from it this season. It's sort of taken a step backwards, if anything. And Colapinto just doesn't have that dog in him. You might as well have left Doohan in it for all the good it was doing. At least Doohan wasn't doing anything terrible and was getting you
Well,
exactly
it's
what
a
you
little bit like
wanted.
the argument for Lawson. There was nowhere near enough time in the car for you to make a concrete decision one way or the other. And if the argument you used to justify getting rid of Doohan was the argument you were still using to justify Colapinto being there, then why hasn't Paul Aaron gotten that car? Why hasn't one of the other of their stable drivers got into that car? Because surely you're just testing everyone out still, right? You're just trying to see what's the best driver to put in the car for your future, right?
Yeah, at
Right?
this point, you
Was
might as
that a
well.
lie? Were they lying to us? They wouldn't do
They
that, would
wouldn't
they?
do
Alpine Flavio Briatore wouldn't mislead us on purpose, would he? Or
that.
even by accident. He's such an angel of the sport, he'd never do anything untoward.
A man of truth. At this point, they might as well chuck Abby pulling in because, I mean, worst case scenario, she scores a point and you sort of have to go, whoops, we guess we picked the wrong person from the off. But yeah, I don't know. The Gasly thing is interesting though, because like you alluded to him being a bit like Albon earlier. They both went through the same ringer at Red Bull. They both had sort of like bad goes at the cherry in Red Bull. And now we're sort of we've come out the other side going, actually, you sort of formed wholly as a driver now. And we're sort of very impressed with what you've got. You're not going to be a generational talent. You're not going to be a Piastri of a Verstappen and a Hamilton, but you're going to be good when we give you like the right machinery that works. And at the moment, we're seeing when it works, Albon is doing that with.
Meanwhile, Alpina reading a book that's just titled How to Make a Car That Doesn't Work with All of the Wrong Pieces.
Well, they're sort of reading Adrian Newey's book, How to Build a Racing Car, backwards, and just sort of it seems to get worse and worse each weekend. And Gasly is sort of,
Why are you taking parts off the car? It says so in
Gasly
the book.
fighting the demons of that team to build something that does work. And you're sort of left at the end of it, sort of going, I don't get what their end result's supposed to be here. And you're just sort of left. By
Yeah.
Alpine more, which is a perfect point to move on to our winners and spinners. Timo, we'll start with your winner, please.
In considering all of the conversation we've had about it and just what we know is capable of there, and still just for the impressiveness of the performance, despite not going racing when we should have done, it's got to be Lewis Hamilton. I mean, goes from what was it, essentially the back, essentially the pit lane, all the way into the top 10. I was thinking I'd been a bit too ambitious with my podium prediction for him, but then when I saw him rocketing up the order like that, I thought, hang on a minute, I might still have a chance here, and makes me even more mad at the FIA for not letting us go racing sooner because they cost me a point, I reckon, and no one can say that I'm wrong because we just don't know.
Yeah, I think it's fair to you for you to be mad at them for that. I think we should have gone racing sooner. My winner, based off of what I said earlier, I think Yuki Tsunoda made some good statements and some good points across this race weekend. While the results weren't there to really sort of stamp it, I think that we sort of got a proper chance to see what he can start doing in that Red Bull with a better setup to it. And I think as he gets more accustomed to the car, as there comes the time to sort of properly reset going into the summer break, obviously after Hungary, I think we could see a more comfortable Yuki Tsunoda. And potentially an early call, maybe a podium from him at Monza, I think, or possibly Baku.
Baku's maybe more likely. I don't see it happening at Monza just because you need to be quick there. And there are other drivers involved, whereas Baku, you can be quick there, and other drivers will still be involved, but you just have to survive a lot of the time. And we're overdue a crazy Baku, so I think maybe put some money on that one if you're going to put it on anything.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those two. And I think definitely, I think Yuki is a driver that often does do those sort of survival races and just makes it to the end. Everyone forgets that this guy was P4 in Abu Dhabi 21, just sort of made his way through all hell breaking loose and came home fourth in an AlphaTauri. And everyone went, the hell are you doing here?
Remind me though, how many times has he repeated that?
Not a great many times.
Is it zero?
It may be zero times since he's finished as high as fourth, but that AlphaTauri has been a bit blowing hot and cold. But anyway, the fact of the matter is, I'm really impressed with what Tsunoda did this weekend. I think if you take into account the whole aesthetic aspect of the weekend, you get a far better look at it. Spinners, you've basically blown my argument apart and added to it.
Yeah, Yuki Tsunoda, because you started in seventh. And I only asked for 10th, so you've got a double whammy to buy two cars that you now don't have an excuse to be buying because you've got all the same parts in your cars. And Isaac Hadjar, I will give him a slight pass just because I don't think that was all his fault, but I'm still going to say he spun as an overall spinner for the weekend. You've got more Route 1, but to be fair, I can't blame you on that one because we're all wondering what on earth is going in there and everyone is just fingers crossed hoping that next year is different. And by different, we mean better because can't get too much worse. We don't need to do Alpine stuff.
Yeah, spinner for me, Aston Martin, because how has it gone this badly wrong for them? Like, come on. Like, you should be up there fighting for points a bit more regularly than this. Like, the amount of investment and time you've poured into your factory and development and building up something and sort of saying, look, we have the, not my words, someone else's almost certainly, young, promising talent of Lance Stroll and the experienced head of Fernando Alonso, you should be able to do something with that. You just have them.
Nico Rosberg was very amusing this weekend for a number of reasons, but one of which was talking about Aston Martin saying they've got the best designer, they've got a new campus, they've got Fernando Alonso. They should be able to do something. Just completely glossed over, which no one can blame him for, of course, but it just was quite funny. And neither Opti or Brundle decided to pick him up on that, because let's face it, they agree with him.
There were a lot of bits that Nico Rosberg put down this weekend, including asking Valtteri Bottas about a contract with Cadillac, to which Valtteri Bottas just said, sorry, I can't hear you. And then also remarking that all of a sudden, Jos Verstappen has become surprisingly quiet following the departure.
I did like that.
I was like, oh, can we have my funny little German man causing chaos on the grid every week, please? Because chef's kiss. Honorary winner's position then to Nico Rosberg. Meanwhile, when it comes to our predictions, it is 1 point to you, Timo, for a Lando Norris pole position, and then a point to both of us for predicting an Oscar Piastri win, and a point to me for Lando Norris P2. 0 points for fastest lap and 0 points for wild prediction.
I do like that these were the predictions we got right, because it, yes, seems very Route 1, but also, and not just to blow my own horn, but the confidence for me to predict Lando will get pole but won't be able to convert it just based on history. And for you to also agree for that if it's going to be anyone, it's still going to be Oscar to get him. It's not going to be because something wild happens, just Oscar's going to get him.
Oscar gets an Oscar.
It says a lot.
Way through, yeah. Meanwhile, Fantasy Formula 1 for the review there for Belgium. Di Tiklias, 247 points. The Mixing Pot, 19, second with 220 points. And Le Victory, 220 points as well. Catherine's Curse, P9. On the Curbs, P16. Can't Grow Moustache, P24. Red Bull Rejects, P62. Kiwi Burners, P63 with minus 72 points. Robert Percy, change your team. You're about to run out of season-long points and dip into...
Overall, it's going well for him, though. He's in positive points now.
He's in positive points still. But that will change, because if he keeps scoring minus points each week, his overall score will go to minus. Overall, Di Tiklias still...
Maybe he thinks it's like QI.
Yeah, he's sort of going for the Allen approach. Di Tecla still leads overall, 2,483 points. Lando, 2,383 points. And Le Victory, 2,376 points. Catherine's Curse stays in P5. Can't Grow Moustache, P9. On the Coast, P12. The Mixing Pot, P13. I'm coming for you. Red Bull Rejects, P62. Kiwi Burners, P63. 11 points, but not for long, because ultimately they will get soaked up
Which
by
is
more minus point finishes.
the only saving grace for Red Bull Rejects, because there is now just a 500-point gap between 62nd and 63rd place in the standings.
That's almost as bad as the gap between McLaren and Ferrari in the constructors, which is a perfect point to conclude this episode of the Undercut podcast. We'll be back next week for a preview of the Hungarian Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can you be found?
Find me over on Instagram at t.elvis.data on the curves. I've got an interview there at the moment with Veronica Babini, so go and check that out, and you can find all of my work there. So that's the place to be.
Lovely. And if you'd like more from me, you can pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly, or give the Classic Car Weekly podcast a listen to, or find me on the internet. I do things there too. But yeah, that's a relatively quiet span for me. I'm trying to think what I'm up to this weekend. Workshop in the Hungarian Grand Prix, really. So yeah, quiet one for me. Otherwise, like I said, we'll be back with a preview of the Hungarian Grand Prix.